Hey folks, and welcome to Connect Live. We are talking about debugging and cloud diagnostics. Now, this is our first Connect Live event where, you know, it's trying to be informal. We're actually in Building 18 where the beautiful product, Visual Studio, Azure Tools SDK, everything is made here. And I'm Dan Fernandez. I want to introduce my esteemed colleagues here. Andrew, why don't you quickly introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Andrew Hall. I'm the program manager for Visual Studio Debugger and work on the broader diagnostics team. We also own the profiling tools and IntelliTrace.
Hey, I'm Sarah Bhatia. I work on the Azure Tools SDK. I kind of own the Azure Tools diagnostic story in the SDK. And I work with Boris.
I'm Boris. I'm a lead program manager on the Azure SDK. I work on diagnostics as well as IoT scenarios.
So, folks, this is your time to ask the hardest possible questions to these guys to get your debugging and cloud diagnostics. Remember, this is interactive. That's what we're trying to do, to get your questions answered. And we do have some demos to kind of get stuff started, because there's been a lot of new improvements, both in the Azure SDK and in Visual Studio 2015 for developers. So, Andrew, I know maybe to get people kind of warmed up here, can you kind of talk about some of the new things for developers that are looking at Visual Studio 2015?
Absolutely. So one of the first things I'm really excited about that we just announced is we've made a lot of improvements to the types of edits you can do that are part of edit and continue. So one of our most popular features, the ability to fix a bug and not have to restart debugging, right? You've run through a scenario for 20, 30 seconds, you find a bug, instead of stop, make the edit, start debugging again, just make the edit and continue. Mm-hmm. So we support working with dynamic objects. We're supporting doing it in async methods. Async's becoming much more common. I find that was actually a big blocker for my using the feature a lot of the time these days.
What about lambdas?
Lambdas do not work yet. Although if you've seen our public announcements, we are actively working on it.
Okay, great.
So we will ship it as soon as it's ready, and it is in progress.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's always the thing. But speaking of lambdas, it's actually a good transition. Some of you may have seen, may have not seen, we support evaluating lambdas in the debugger watch windows now. So you can use it in the immediate windows or the watch windows. So that should really help reduce the time it takes to debug problems, because you can just keep trying them out in the watch windows until you get it right. No more, you know, stop, make an edit, start debugging again, oops, didn't work right, stop, try it again. So you can keep trying it till you get it right.
Awesome, awesome. And these are new features for Visual Studio 2015?
That's correct.
And we just released CTP 6. So is this all features that customers can try out today if they download the CTP?
Absolutely.
Okay, awesome. So homework for the folks to try some stuff out. Now, you do have some demos.
I do have some demos, absolutely.
Right? So let's see if we can actually get some demos on a screen here. And what are you going to walk us through?
All right, so the first thing I'm going to do is we talked about some of the newly supported edit and continue functionality.
Okay.
So I have a WPF application here. It's going to try to calculate a factorial when I click this button. And when I click the button, it's going to blow up and tell me that I had a null reference exception.
Okay, so what I'm seeing here is you F5'd and you hit the button, and now you get a null reference. Okay.
Correct. And so what I want to do is you'll actually notice that this D result is actually of type dynamic. And it's coming back as null. So the first thing I'm going to do is I want to fix the bug where I'm not actually checking to see if it's a null reference exception. So for those of you familiar with the new language features in .NET, I can actually make use of these and edit and continue as well.
Oh.
So I'm going to add the new dot operator. I'm going to go ahead and
For folks not familiar with the dot operator, again, kind of talk about what it does for if there is a null value, if you will.
Yeah, so this would be the equivalent of wrapping this whole statement in if d result does not equal null, then txt result.text equals d result.message.
Right, so just kind of a syntactic sugar, if you will, for not having to always check for null.
Exactly.
Cool.
But that's a brand new language feature, and so you notice that I started stepping, which means it was able to correctly apply my edit.
Cool.
And so when I hit F10 to step over this, you're going to see that I stepped over it, I didn't crash anymore. So per the conversation, via edit and continue, I was actually able to resolve the crash right away. I didn't have to stop, make my edit, recompile, and then start debugging again.
Awesome. Love it.
So. We fixed that issue, so that's one reliability issue. The next thing I want to understand is I want to understand actually why this is coming back as null. I'm actually expecting the factorial of 10 should have a real value.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go ahead and bring the instruction pointer back up. So that's a tip for people that may or may not be aware of it. You can actually grab that little yellow thing and change the execution of the program.
Is that called run to cursor or
run to cursor?
Which one?
This is set next statement.
Set next statement.
So the first time I did it via right click. The shorter way to do it is via the click and drag.
Okay.
But it's also on the context menu. Set next statement, what that does is that actually just without executing any code, just changes where the instruction pointer is in the instruction stream. So it's just going to say execute this next. Don't do anything between. Run to cursor is like a one-time breakpoint. So if I say run to cursor, that's going to basically set a temporary breakpoint. Run to it. When it's hit, it's going to automatically delete it on my behalf.
Cool.
So actually, let's do that. So I'm going to just step down into this do factorial async, and we can use run to cursor since you asked about it. And let's run to cursor. And so now I'm down inside factorial async. And so as I step over it, I can see that I get a factorial value back. And I want to point out again that I'm in an async method here that's executing in a task. And factorial is a value of something big because factorials get big. Mm-hmm. And if I look through my logic, well, it's not less than zero and it's not equal to zero. So I realize that my problem is that I've actually forgotten a conditional statement here. So I need my else statement to account for the good case. So I'll just go ahead and say else. And then let's say return value equals new good value. And we'll say factorial. And then the next type of edit that I want to actually show that we support is we support all the new C# 6 features, including string interpolation.
Oh,
so if I want to say good value was, and then I can just say this factorial, like that. And then assuming I correctly put a semicolon there, should be a valid edit. And now when I hit F10, you're going to actually see that that's applied. And when I start debugging again, you're going to see that that string that I just did leveraging the new string interpolation feature was.
And just for folks, again, everything was done on a breakpoint, which is really kind of the news, if you will, because you can do this kind of editing. And a lot of times folks were kind of limited before with Visual Studio 2013 in terms of what they could actually do on a breakpoint in terms of that edit and continue sequence.
Absolutely. So everything I just showed, if you had tried to modify a dynamic object type, if you tried to do it in a method that was async, or if you tried to use any of the new C# 6 language features, like string interpolation or the new question mark operator, if you had tried this in our previous CTP, this is all brand new in CTP 6, you would have gotten a dialog that popped up and said, you've made an edit that can't be applied. Do you want to basically undo your edit, or do you want to stop debugging and restart debugging so we can compile it outside the context of debugging?
Okay, cool. So we do have a question as we go, and I know you have some more demos, but just wanted to get these questions answered. So the first one is by Stuart. Can Visual Studio 2015 beta, and it is a CTP, we should say, be installed side by side with the currently shipping version? And the answer to that is yes. It can absolutely be installed. One thing to remember, though, this is a community technology preview. So in other words, it may not be something you want to install on your primary machine, but the nice thing is, with the power of the cloud, you can actually, and an MSDN subscription. Why don't you talk about what you can do on Azure to basically try these out easily?
So yeah, with every major CDP or preview of Visual Studio, we also build a companion image that comes with it, and we basically host it in Azure. So if you have an MSDN subscription and you enable your Azure benefits, you can just go in there into the Azure portal, provision a virtual machine with Visual Studio on it, and then basically try out the new features, see if your code works in Visual Studio, and explore all the goodies. And the real advantage of that is you don't need to install anything on your production machines that you might need to remove, or the upgrade might not be smooth. So it's a very clean way for you to test out the new Visual Studio features.
Yeah, and from there you can remote desktop and do everything that you'd normally want to. Yep. You can of course hit your source control if you want to try your real projects as well. I mean, this is awesome, because if you think about it before, I'd have to go log into my MSDN subscription, download maybe an ISO. Sure. It would take an hour to install, you know, if it's fast.
Yep.
Maybe another 30 minutes to download. And now within, you know, 10, 15 minutes you can have a VM with Visual Studio up.
Yep.
Which is very cool. So Sam asks another question. Does this new debugging work for all managed languages? So we're showing C# here. What about VB and F#?
So it absolutely works for VB. It will not work for F#.
Not work for F#. Okay, well, there you go. So back to some demos, and keep the questions coming. This is why we're here, to get your questions answered. But what other stuff you got?
So the next thing I want to show is I mentioned the Lambda expression support. This was actually our top user voice ask for people that are aware of user voice. If you're not, go check it out, visualstudio.uservoice.com. We really do make an effort to prioritize the features that you vote highly on that. Mm-hmm. So for example, we've been talking about edit and continue in Visual Studio 2013. X64 support for edit and continue is the top ask. We delivered that in 2013. In 2015, the Lambda support in the watch windows, which we're about to take a look at right now, is actually the top ask on the debugger team, and so we've gone ahead and delivered that.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and just click this button, and I'm going to hit a breakpoint, and I have a list, has 100 items in it, and let's say I want to ask some questions about the items that are in the list. Using a Lambda expression. Maybe I'm trying to debug a problem, and I want to know how many items in the list are, instead of going through and manually drilling
where
through...
Where it's even numbers.
Where it's even numbers. Oh, you're going to make me think on this
one. It's like modulo 2, right?
List.where, yeah, absolutely. N...
Or it starts with 0. Or...
N mod no, 2 no, if you... equals 0.
I can write the code if you need help.
Count. That should do it. Let's do that.
And let's see if that works. Yeah.
Even.
That's awesome.
So, you know, had I tried this in Visual Studio 2013, I would have seen an error message as soon as I typed that that said expressions cannot contain Lambda expressions.
Okay. What about link expressions? Like, can I do var x equals from L in list?
Yeah, so we support any, we would support link expressions. The one caveat here with the current implementation is you can't have a dependency on native code executing. So for example, link to SQL won't work because it calls down into a native code layer.
Okay.
And actually, from an implementation perspective, how we support this is the Roslyn compiler compiles this when you type it in, and then we actually interpret the generated IL. So the same thing that the compiler interprets. The runtime jits after you have a binary. So if you have any sort of native code dependencies, we're not going to be able to interpret what would happen when native code, external native dependencies need to execute, for example, like your SQL adapter or something like that.
And what about anything with immediate async await that you guys have changed or that is better or?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Async support for immediate window? Is there anything that's new that you guys have added there or?
Can you give me a scenario? Sorry, I'm having
a... let's say, you know, you're pulling something and I am basically awaiting a method call to do something, but it's an async method. Right, it should just work, right? There's no magic.
Yeah, it shouldn't be any magic required.
Okay, so. Well, that's basically what I'm asking, like, just to make sure that it worked.
Yeah, it should.
Okay, it should. So one of the things I noticed is while you were executing was the performance tips. Are you going to show that as well?
I was going to show that. Absolutely.
Okay, fine. I'm stealing your thunder. Great.
So I'm going to go ahead and actually flip over to just a little bit of a different application. Weird thing with my IntelliSense, so you can ignore the red squiggles for the moment. But I have an application here. You're going to take my word for it. I'm not going to make you suffer through it. But when I start debugging, it's going to take a long time in the initial startup screen. I'm going to see a progress bar going around. And so we've added this new feature that you referenced called performance tips. So when I step over this particular method, and this may take a little bit because it's actually downloading something from the cloud, it's going to come back and it's going to show me a number that tells me exactly how long it took to execute that.
Okay, cool.
So I can see here that it took about 8.5 seconds, so 8,487 milliseconds, to execute that get images from cloud functionality.
Okay.
And then when I step over this load images from disk, I can see that that completes in less than or equal to 183 milliseconds.
So while we're going through, you only see the performance tip. This is more of a while you're on a breakpoint line by line execution time?
Yeah, so we show you how long your application was running between points. So if I, for example, run to cursor here, you're going to see it's going to tell me how long all that code in between executed. So before, when I stepped over this line, it was how long that line took to execute.
Right.
And then I noticed I was here, and so I ran to cursor, so it's how long these three lines take to execute. So this works between breakpoints, this works when stepping. It's how long your application was actually running in between break states in the debugger.
This is awesome. Now, is this clickable?
This is clickable, and it's going to open this new diagnostics tool window that we have added in Visual Studio 2015. And so there's a couple things that are going on here. I have a few graphs. So I have a concept of debugger events. It's going to show me when I'm at break states. although I'm in a Windows Store app right now, so that's not supported exactly there. We can go look at this in Adobe PFF.
So what is a break state?
A break state is any time you are stopped under the debugger. So for example, when we hit a break point, we're at a break state. When I step, I'm at a break state. So it's where your application, so when I'm in a full
run. And it's just not supported in Windows Store apps?
Windows Store apps.
Okay.
Correct, yeah.
So, but ASP.NET developers?
ASP.NET developers, I actually have a WPF version of this we can flip over to here in a second.
Okay, and ASP.NET vNext as well?
All of this stuff will work in ASP.NET vNext.
Great.
So, thank you. So let me go ahead and actually just start the WPF app since you asked that. Set a startup project. And let's go ahead here into the mainwindow.cs and let's just step around. Gotta find the place that I want to start stepping. And let's go ahead and we just look at this. So I've hit that, and then as I step, we mentioned that we can click this. It's gonna. I hadn't pinned the window, so if I pin the window, it'll stay up for me. It's like any other tool window in Visual Studio.
Mm-hmm.
I should mention, just for the people at home, I'm actually using a slightly newer internal build than the CTP6. This is not a tool window in CTP6. It actually behaves like a document window. Mm. So you're gonna see a few annoying behaviors when you play with it. Like when you resize the pane, for example, it's gonna come back up at its default size next time. A few other things that aren't going to be remembered. I promise we've fixed that. So you're just going to have to wait for the next release. It just was fixed after we kind of snapped our bits for the CTP6.
So while we're just stopped right here, John actually has a question. Do we have to do anything to enable the perf tips in debugging? Is this on by default?
This is absolutely on by default.
Okay, awesome.
If you, for some reason, decide that they're annoying, and I've actually, I should point out that I've changed my font color to make them stand out a little bit more.
Okay.
I have made them black, so you can see them better for the purpose of this demo. They're normally actually a dark gray, the same color that these code lens items are right here.
Right.
And so we've actually found in all of our UX testing and when people are using them, they're really subtle. Once you know they're there, they're easy to look at, but if you're not interested in them, they're really easy to ignore at that color, right?
You and really aren't noticing. And if you really did want to turn them off,
if
tools
you
options.
Really did want to turn them off, absolutely. So debug, scroll down because of our high DPI settings. All right, tools, options. And then under my debugging settings, we have diagnostic tools. It's under general. There's a setting for it to turn them off.
Yeah, I was going to say you can always search.
That's right. They used to be on their own page, and they're not on their own page anymore.
Okay, no worries, no worries.
Absolutely. You can turn them off. So.
Cool. We do have a couple questions while we're actually stopped. And this one, Boris, if you could answer. PNEW Hook asks, is that virtual machine image available offline?
To be honest, so the virtual machine image that we created is not available offline, but I think you can get the bits from MSDN just from MSDN download as with any other release.
Meaning the VM image with everything configured, or does a customer have to install VS, is what you're saying? Because I know customers know they can install VS, but the VM image itself is available?
So the VM image itself that we created is not available offline.
Okay. Okay, I think this might be a feature request.
Yes, noted.
Okay. Cool. So sorry. Back to we're seeing perf tips. We're on a breakpoint in a W. Did you switch back?
I switched to the WPF app. Absolutely.
Okay. So now we're in a WPF app, and take it away.
Yeah. So I wanted to point out the thing that wasn't working for because I happened to be in a store app, but it's working in the WPF app. Is you now see this events timeline populated over here, and this is mixed with what you would have seen in the output window. So we have all the output window. Events in here, and you can choose to filter them. So there's a bunch of different categories. Output is one of them. And then it's also supplementing with IntelliTrace events. So people that are familiar with IntelliTrace, we've now unified those into a single structured window. So if you think about the output window, it's sort of this raw dump of text information.
Yeah, gorgeous.
And over here, I now have a beautifully structured table that has filtering capabilities.
So let's talk through what do you mean by filtering capabilities? So is this like if I did debug.writeline or trace warning versus
absolutely.
Info or?
Yeah, so when I say filtering, what I mean is I mentioned that we mix this with IntelliTrace as well.
Okay.
And so you can see the various categories that I can turn on or off here. So if I'm not interested in seeing thread events, I can choose to have those not show up. If I don't want the output window events or gesture events such as button click or things like that showing up, I can go ahead and just make these disappear. If I don't want output from like debug.writeline, I can turn that off.
Okay.
But it's still there, so I can bring it back. So the beautiful thing about filtering, which I'm sure Boris and Sarab will talk about here in a few minutes, is I have all the data, I can just choose my view on it. Where the output window in the old world, actually, right, it's just this long text dump of everything that I had.
Right.
And then I have to scroll through it and decide if I care about it, if I don't, and it's just sort of flat text. This is a table, so I have split into columns. And so, for example, we're talking about perf tips. And so you can see that I had a step that was 4 milliseconds. Let's say I step through a bunch of stuff in my code and I say, hey, I don't remember what my perf tip 4 steps ago was. Notice I have the step recorded event down here, and I actually have my duration,
That's
which matches
awesome.
The perf tip.
Very awesome.
So if I step again, then you're going to see more events pop up, and I have this step recorded as well.
Now, is there any integration with the performance profiler where the profiler will kind of tell you where, like, the longest thing is in here? Or when would I use the performance profiler versus bring up this window and kind of do one by one?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the first, let me point out by pointing out that we do have a few memory graphs up here, or two graphs up here that give you sort of at-a-glance performance information. So I have memory and I have CPU utilization. So as I run my app, so I don't have, every time I step, you'll actually notice that the app, that these graphs will move, and they're filtering out time that I'm stopped. So I have a really lightweight concept of what's going on in my application from a memory and CPU perspective, just based purely on the graphs without actually having to run any tools.
Sure.
And then the performance tips give me that sort of finer grain measurement of how long approximately is this various methods taking to execute. And I will mention at this point that we're still working on actually reducing the amount of overhead.
Mm-hmm.
You're still going to see a lot of times steps and managed code, even if you're not doing anything interesting, are going to be on the order of 2 to 5 milliseconds. A point where we're trying to work to get that down. But you need to take the numbers with an understanding that you're running a debug build, you're running with the debugger attached. We have a few measurement things. There's some things that go on in a process when a debugger is attached that may not normally. So for example, you step over an int I equals 0, we may tell you it took 2 or 3 milliseconds. In reality, that probably took a few nanoseconds. So you sort of need to add a little padding when you think about these numbers. Don't panic. That's
the overhead of actually measuring, right?
That's the overhead of measuring. And I said we have some work that should be coming in a future update 2015 that should get those numbers more accurate. But,
okay, great.
We're continually working on it. Just don't panic if you step over something that says it took 5 milliseconds and you say, really, declaring an int shouldn't take 5 milliseconds.
Right, right.
And then, so we have this concept of CPU usage. So you, I think, asked about this. And I can click pause, and then we'll actually pull in some CPU usage information as well. For the record, I'm actually not sure as I show this that this is this will work in CTP6. I can't remember.
Okay.
But so this is a little preview, if it doesn't, of stuff that we have coming down the pipe.
Okay, and I actually like the idea of search. So the search, if I had, say, a method name, could I be able to find it there?
Yeah, that's the idea behind search, absolutely.
Okay.
Now, I don't actually know what we've done, because we've basically stepped through the initialization code of
this. Yeah, it's like...
So let's see if we can find a main window. I don't actually know what's here or not. There we go. There's
cool.
So main window. It found my constructor for my main window.
Great.
So absolutely, you can search for particular methods and try to understand how much those are consuming in terms of total CPU usage.
Love it. Absolutely love it.
The other thing that you can do is you can take, and this has been available for a little while, but we can drill into memory information as well.
Mm-hmm.
So let's actually keep running the app for a minute. And so I have, just shows me a bunch of pictures that are in my pictures folder. Yep, those are my kids. So let's say I double click this. It's going to open a new new page. And notice that my memory went up. So just by virtue of running this in the context of the debugger, I sort of have a way to monitor this. Now I'm going to close the page, and I'd actually expect my memory to go back down. But notice that it never did, right? So what do I do? Well, let's go ahead and take a snapshot. Let's try this again. And I can do this whether I'm at a breakpoint or in a run state. The extra cool thing that you get at a breakpoint, so we'll go ahead and, is you can actually drill in and inspect variables. My memory went up again. It didn't go back down, so let's take another snapshot. And now I'm gonna see a diff view. It's going to tell me that actually my number of objects decreased, which is probably because of garbage collection.
Mm-hmm.
But I can go drill in, and now I have this view that's going to show me some information. So let's say view full screen, just so we can get this really quick. And so I now have this view of that's showing me count, total size, oops, because I didn't click on the diff information. So let's go back, exit full screen mode for a second. What I should have clicked on was that. And now I'll be in my diff view. And so now I'm actually getting a comparison of, I can actually see what's changed in terms of size, in terms of counts, in terms of, we do this concept of inclusive. We try to walk the concept of what you're referencing. Mm-hmm. And so this is how much memory are you actually responsible for keeping alive. So it's basically you plus all of your children from a logical perspective.
Very cool.
And so this is all integrated into the debugger now.
That's awesome.
So then you asked, when would you run stuff outside the debugger? I mentioned the concept of the kind of the various overhead that comes with the debugger. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for sort of broader swaths of, oops, I did that, my memory had a big jump, but it didn't come back down, or hey, that was really slow. If we think of the thing I did earlier where I was retrieving some stuff from the cloud, and I'm like, that was taking eight seconds. That's obviously going to be something I can just preemptively optimize as part of my debugging workflow. Mm-hmm. If you're sort of looking at more fine-grained things like, hey, this, you know, the rendering speed of this is really slow because it's doing some interesting graphics processing or something like that, you're going to want to flip it to a release build, and then you'd want to profile it in the context outside the context of a debugger. So yep. It sort of depends on kind of the workflow thing. The idea behind bringing this into the debugging, the debugger itself, was that we wanted to meet you where you were in your workflow, so as you're developing, you can just sort of notice things, right? We have graphs, we show you in the editor how long things take, and you're like, hey, that's really slow, let me just go preemptively take care of that, as opposed to potentially finding it later in testing, because it's always easier to do it when you're coding it the first time than to go fix it later. But this is certainly not sort of fine-grained measurement if you're interested in, hey, I need to make sure that this gets from 70 milliseconds to 60 milliseconds, you should be using the tools outside of the debugger.
Okay, so we have some questions here. Shag YGI asks, is the diagnostic tool limited to a particular VS SKU, for example, Ultimate?
At this point, we have not made any SKU announcements. I'm actually the lowly product team. I just build the features. I don't actually know what decisions are going to be made regarding SKUs.
Do you have anything? No one has an answer. Okay, so how's that? We unanswered question. That was the hardest question so far, is on our SKU plan. Steven PSA asks, when will store apps be fully supported?
That's a great question. We don't have a definitive timeline I can announce. If it's something that's important to you, I'd suggest that I mentioned User Voice earlier, go create an item on User Voice and get people to vote for it.
And we talked about ASP.NET. What are the supported app types?
So I should clarify when I commented on store apps not being fully supported. What doesn't work for store apps is the events that we were looking at.
Okay.
So this sort of, there's additional events, the IntelliTrace events concept. So perf tips work, memory snapshots work, the CPU graph works. It's just some of the debugger
events.
It's
literally this window events filtered view.
Correct.
Okay, cool. Now, do you have other stuff to show us? I know we got to get to our wonderful cloud diagnostics, but I want to make sure we got
well,
to
show. Well, let's move over to them, and if we have extra time, we can come back and look at additional goodies. I'll just mention we have a blog, aka.ms/diagnosticsblog. There's a lot more stuff on there that I haven't covered, but you can go read that, and let's give Boris and Sarab a chance, and if we have extra time, we can come back and look at some more good stuff.
Okay, and before we do, Chris asked a good question, which is, will all of this work with Windows 10 Universal Apps?
So Windows 10 Universal Apps have the same caveat as store apps. Everything I've showed is going to work except the debugger events view.
Okay, very cool. So transitioning a little to diagnostics and cloud diagnostics.
Sure. So,
folks, what are we talking about here?
Yeah. So actually, let's first start with like what's different when we start thinking about cloud diagnostics, right? So we looked at using the debugger on a local machine, and traditionally, when you think about cloud diagnostics, what you're doing is you have tracing in your application. Your application is running on the cloud, and let's get the cable sorted out. Your application's running on the cloud.
We're doing this live, baby.
Yeah, you're writing these log statements. When something goes wrong, you want to debug through the issue, you got to look through the logs, figure out what's wrong. If you miss something that you didn't log, you got to kind of add additional tracing, deploy it again, and figure out what's wrong again. So that's kind of been the traditional flow when you think about diagnostics, and we'll actually show a little bit of that too. But a good transition point here is when you're just talking about debugging, we also have something called a remote debugger, right? So you have a cloud service up and running, and we can just attach a remote debugger from Visual Studio using the same debugger that you get and get some of the same capabilities that you saw Andrew showing off. Of course, this would be for the ASP.NET apps. So maybe we should just start demoing, yeah, unless
so
you wanted to end.
To add on to so what Saurabh just mentioned, I mean, the flow is you basically you install the SDK, right?
Azure SDK.
The Azure SDK, yes.
It's basically installed on top of Visual Studio, and we support all the major Visual Studio versions. Mm-hmm. And then the Azure SDK also comes with an emulator, so you can do a local debugging.
Yep.
Which is still slightly different than the full-blown debugger that you that Andrew was showing, because we debug an emulator, right? Because the Azure for cloud services runs in an emulator, so we need to attach to the emulator process as well, and then actually hook in the debugger.
Now, for virtual machines and for Azure websites, for folks that aren't necessarily, because there's, and this is probably a good thing, because cloud really means like three, yes, almost three different targets,
yep,
if not more, if you start counting some other stuff. Maybe give an overview of what we can, yep, do from a remote debugging across all three targets.
So if we look at actually four, right, because we enable remote debugging for cloud services,
sure,
and you can do it locally as well as remotely.
Mm-hmm.
We enable remote debugging for virtual machines, mm-hmm, through an extension. We enable remote debugging for Azure websites, mm-hmm, and for mobile services.
And web jobs.
Yeah,
if you want to just keep adding.
So all of our major compute containers support the debugging feature.
Okay.
And that's actually one design principle we have in mind, right? Once we introduce like diagnostics features to a certain compute container, we want to make like all the compute containers have the same features available.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
So again, remote debugger is slightly different, as Saurabh pointed out. It's not on par with the full-blown functionality that your local debugger has in an Azure context. The reason for that is, if you think about like performance data that Andrew was showing, that performance data needs to be somehow transferred back into Visual Studio,
sure,
because we are debugging in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm going to show you now is basically an example of a cloud service debugger. And because we added a very cool feature, which was requested by a bunch of customers, which is interop debugging and native debugging.
Okay.
So let's start with how would I enable debugging for a cloud service. I would go to publish.
So real quick, you have a cloud service project here.
Mm-hmm.
It is not published to the cloud yet. That's what you're doing right now?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, I'm not publishing because it would take 5 minutes. I'm talking it through it.
Right? Oh, okay.
So. That's
probably a good idea.
Yep. So this is a cloud service project, and it has a web project associated with it, called WebRoll, right? And the WebRoll project, just to give you an idea, is very simple. As you can see, I'm a gifted UI developer.
That's
basically
gorgeous.
A calculator.
Yes. Very minimalistic.
Right? So, and then the way you deploy it is, you can go in here and say, publish it. In the publish dialog, we have the main section, the common settings, and then we have the advanced section. And in the advanced section, we basically have all the diagnostics features and tools.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to enable them for cloud services before you actually deploy. Because what's happening is we package, in the debugger case, MSVSmon. In the IntelliTrace case, we package the IntelliTrace agent. For the profiler case, we package VSPerf and then have it part of the package, of the cloud service package, move it up into Azure.
And these are all three separate items that are not on by default, that,
yes,
before a customer deploys when they're debugging their app should go in here and change the,
yes, status. So the only thing we turn on by default, and so Rob's going to talk about that, is really diagnostics. So we,
mm-hmm,
turn on diagnostics by default, but no profiling, debugging, or IntelliTrace. So in here, I say enable remote debugger for all roles. What that means is in a cloud service, you can have multiple roles. Think about a tiered architecture. You have a web role and a worker role. Your web role gets the web input or hosts an IIS service. And then your worker role is some background processes. So we enable a remote debugger for all roles because all those roles are part of one package. Right?
Okay.
So let's assume I enabled it here, and then I hit publish, and then basically Visual Studio goes off and publishes it. So to enable the remote debugger, it's very straightforward. This is the website I'm having here, right? Think about this, c9interop.cloudapp.net.
You realize you have a couple seconds before people start slamming this website.
Yep.
So.
And yeah, so I hide it. So then we have the Server Explorer. In the Server Explorer, you basically see the production slot and the web role.
Okay.
What you can do now is just simply go in here and say you want to attach the debugger. So then a familiar window comes up. It's basically the debugger, and you can select what type of applications you want to debug. In that case, I'm gonna debug wanna debug a managed and a native application.
Mm-hmm.
Gonna hit OK. Then here I'm choosing the process that I'm executing because I'm running in the web context. I'm executing a W3WP process. We also made the list of processes available to you because it's we realized that people run custom software on cloud services as well as on virtual machines, right? It's very typical that on a virtual machine, you host an application that has its own process. So we really want to enable the full-blown debugging scenario.
Yeah, and the idea is, you know, there's people that just do regular web apps where you're attaching to, you know, W3 yep. process. And then there's folks who's like, hey, I'm building my own custom sockets, you know, yes. multiplayer game service, and yep. I need to attach not to the website, to that service itself. Here, you'll see all the processes. Yes. Cool.
All right, so now I'm going to hit attach and get a warning. So now it's basically loading the symbols up here and hopefully.
And you did native too?
I did check native and .NET. So it's loading the symbols. Now I know I can actually debug because my breakpoint is fully filled. Let's go to the website and.
And what you're saying there is when you first do that, you'll see kind of an open circle
yeah.
that lets you yep. know it's still doing its stuff. Yep. And when it's fully full, it'll actually break.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to hit the button. And the cool thing is, think about this is really in the cloud. This is running in the cloud. This code is being executed in Azure. So now I'm hitting my breakpoint, and I have like.
And this, is, again, could be some machine in like West San Francisco yes. or East Coast or, you know,
yep.
you know Australia, because now we have the Azure region.
What you need to factor in if you're debugging a service that runs in a data center of ours, very, very far away, you're dealing with high latency, so the performance might not be like optimized.
Okay.
So now I can step through it like just with any other local debugging experience. I can see my values in Watchbox. It's just like local debugging.
Okay, yeah, I'm in C#.
So very now cool. the cool point is, as you see here, I'm importing a C++ DLL, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because step in here, and now I'm going to step into the C++ code. Now I'm in the C++ code, and I can actually step through it just as, and I get all
Ooh.
Right?
Now we're in C++. Awesome.
And now I'm back. So this is just a short, brief demo to show you what's possible with remote debugging on cloud services and on virtual machines.
Yeah, I was going to add a couple of things. You mentioned, like, oh, people could hit the site. Sort of, but they won't have a great experience because we've attached a debugger, and we are breaking on a breakpoint. So we're actually kind of halting the execution of that cloud service, right?
Which is a good point. Yeah. You should not be doing remote debugging
yes.
in production,
no. yes,
right?
Exactly.
Because
it's
there
really
will be exactly one person,
yep.
and that's the person stepping through.
Yep, exactly. So it's really meant for those dev test scenarios
and
before it goes to production.
So another thing is when I actually attach the debugger, I stop the debugger. When can that machine start receiving requests again?
So once you detach the debugger, or if you leave it up and running, it detaches itself.
Okay.
Andrew can probably talk to that, because if MSVSmon doesn't receive any communication for a while, it detaches itself, right?
That's correct, yeah. So how the debugger works is once you hit that breakpoint, it's going to stop all the threads in the process, which is why it's going to be unresponsive for everybody, because every request gets created a thread.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you start debugging again, assuming you haven't hit a breakpoint or an exception hasn't occurred or something like that, then it's going to be running. Of course, you run the risk of an exception occurring or something like that, stopping all the threads again. But as soon as you click stop debugging, in Azure today, it's an attached scenario. And so the debugger is just going to detach itself mm-hmm. and return the application to its original state. Or if, as Boris said, for some reason you lose an internet connection, after 10 seconds, the debugger will detach itself and resume everything. So
okay.
So we should also probably one thing here. If you're in a cloud service scenario and you have two instances,
mm-hmm.
meaning two virtual machines, so what can happen if you're attached to the debugger, the cloud service infrastructure detects that the process is stopped on that machine and starts a healing process, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you have two instances running, it would direct the traffic to the second one.
To the other one. So yeah. it'll be smart if you've set up
yeah.
multiple instances.
Yep.
And can you attach to a specific instance?
Yes, you can totally do that.
So you can choose do I want any or
yes.
want a specific one?
So if you attach to the role, in the cloud services case, we attach to all the instances. And basically, where the load balancer sends the traffic to, that's the first instance where the breakpoint gets hit.
Okay.
Right? And if you're just attached to an instance, you need to wait for the load balancers round robin to basically direct traffic to that instance, and then it's getting hit.
So we do have some questions. Scott asks, do we need Visual Studio 2015 and the latest Azure SDK to use these remote debugging tools, or does it just work with VS 2013?
It does work with Visual Studio 2013, and we introduced it with the Azure SDK 2.2, I want to say.
Yeah.
We're in 2.5 right now.
And we're in 2.5. So
latest Azure. It also works on 2012. Is
yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the only difference is, I guess, as you use the newer Visual Studio, you get the newer features.
Yeah, so Azure Mobile Services, I think, launched in 2.3, so if you need to debug that, then you'd need that. But the point is, Visual Studio 2013, get the latest Azure SDK, you're set.
Yep.
I do actually want to point out one thing, because we have gotten some feedback on this, and that is Visual Studio 2015, you have to still be on the preview version to remote debug to Azure. At the moment, the CTPs are not supported. We won't support it again on the newest version until you roll forward to eventually our RC release of Visual Studio 2015.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I was going to add, we're actually working on some improvements so that future CTPs would be supported. But at the moment, the CTPs are not going to be supported. Only the previews and RCs would be supported.
So Harris Scott asks, this is great. How do we send you feedback on features that we have problems with using because of design? So I'm going to say general feedback for all of you. You know, you mentioned user voice. But other ways to get feedback around here?
We also monitor user voice on Azure.
Yep. Send a smile, the Visual Studio has a little smiley face in the top corner.
That too.
I can guarantee you there is somebody in Visual Studio that reads every single comment that you send us via that send a smile feature. So if you have a problem with something, click the send a smile, say I don't like it. You can include a screenshot. You can actually collect dump files or performance traces if that's your problem. And that all gets packaged up and sent to us. And somebody will look at it. If you include your email address, they will actually follow up with you if we have further questions. So
I think that's one key thing is a lot of times we don't understand the context of the person. Because you can send anonymous, but it's super helpful if you can send an email address. Because that way we can be like, well, how did you even run into this? I see the screenshot of something terrible has happened on VS. We'd love to know kind of the repro steps, for example.
Absolutely. So a lot of times, you know, in the debugger, we'll get, I tried to evaluate variable X, and I got an error. Please fix it. And obviously, most variable evaluation succeeds, so we need to understand exactly what is that type, what was the state of the application, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
Yeah. I think it really comes down to, from an engineering side, we're very, very feedback-driven, and we really value your feedback, and the more you can provide, the better it is.
Right? Yeah.
So then comes down to we're building the product for you guys. I mean,
absolutely. Right? So Brian321 asks, can we use remote debugging with things running in AWS VMs or only Azure? And maybe it should be important to say, you know, we talked about MSVSMon, which is the remote debugger. Like, if I just have a server, you know, somewhere inside my organization, can I remote debug? And then what about other cloud vendors as well?
So the short answer is, if you can get the remote debugger started, and it has permissions to debug the process that you're debugging, then theoretically it can be done. I haven't tried it in Amazon Web Services. You obviously have to, the firewall has to allow the communication through. So there's sort of a bunch of holes that have to be punched in terms of how these things are working. But in theory, if machine A can talk to machine B and MSVSMon can be run in a context that it has permissions to debug the process you're interested in, it's theoretically possible.
Yeah, I think we tried it before we implemented a feature with Azure and it worked. You basically debug over the internet, which has security concerns. For our feature, just to add that, all of our features, the communication is cert secured. So that's a very secure channel.
And that's TLS, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Thanks. Which is, I know there's a somewhere on MSDN, you can Google it with Bing, is an article on how to set up MSVSMon on a remote machine. And part of that is security considerations for when you do MSVSMon over a remote network, or especially over the internet.
Yep.
Yeah, and I should mention, by default, we rely on Windows authentication. So if you have the same Windows, if you have Windows accounts on both sides of the pipe, you can theoretically do it via Windows authentication. Mm-hmm. Azure obviously provides their own secure channel. And we technically do it on top of what's called a no-auth mode. If you go no-auth mode without a secure channel that Azure takes care of the security for you, you're basically sending unencrypted traffic that allows you to control the process, and everything you inspect is coming back unencrypted. So that is something to be aware of.
Yep. Okay, cool. Mipesum has no question, but feedback, thumbs up for Connect Live. So cool, thank you really to these folks that are getting demos working, which is always a beautiful thing when you're debugging.
Don't jinx it, don't jinx it.
Yeah, exactly. So now it's Rob's turn to completely fail on camera.
All right, so I guess what I wanted to talk about next is kind of the tracing capabilities or the diagnostic capabilities in Azure SDK 2.5, if I can get the mouse. By default, as Boris mentioned earlier, when you have a cloud service project, we enable diagnostics for you. And what that really means is there's a listener that is going to listen to all your trace statements and kind of capture all them on the VM, whether you're running on a VM or on PaaS, and transfer it over to a storage account.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so over here, I have this guestbook application. We've been using that as a sample. And all it really is let me just pull that up. It's just a simple guestbook. You sign your name, upload a picture, and we have a web role that puts this front end on there and a worker role that's going to process the image and display a thumbnail.
So this is just a simple ASP.NET app in the web role. And is what was the worker role or anything?
Worker role is actually, so if I go back, the worker role is I can upload an image and I'll little thumbnail and show it back up there. So you're offloading the processing to the worker role.
Offloading, making the small thumbnail.
Exactly,
okay.
Exactly, yeah. So it just shows you how you can do things, how you can scale out your applications.
Sure.
So what I wanted to show is by default, if you just click over here, there's this enable diagnostics checkbox, which is always checked. And you can go to configure, by default there'll be like an errors only setting, which will capture all the errors so that you're sure that the errors get transferred over. And what I've done here is switch to a custom plan, which really allows me to select what are the logs I want to capture. Azure Diagnostics lets you capture all kinds of logs. So application logs is the stuff you write with system trace. Info, system trace errors, diagnostic errors, and things like that.
Okay.
Windows event logs is where you start capturing Windows event logs. And I think I saw a question up there on whether you can also capture your custom event logs. That's also possible. It doesn't show up in the UI, and that's something we are working on. But what this is doing is as I configure things to the UI, this is really pushing things into this XML file. So all the tabs that you saw there for application logs, IIS logs, are just putting it in this XML file, and you can just go to your Windows event log section, add your data source, whatever your custom event source is, and put it over there, and it'll also start capturing your custom event log source.
So if a customer built their own event source and were writing just to that event source,
exactly.
That's how they would do it. Okay.
Exactly. So all this kind of existed even in like SDK 2.4. What was really new in SDK 2.5 was ETW logs, which is like really the capability to write structured logs through ETW and then event source, which is what helps you write them in .NET.
So why would I want this type of logging versus, say, trace messages?
Yep.
I mean, you show application, events, performance count. What's new or unique about this capability?
Yeah, so firstly, like a lot of those other events are like infrastructure events, which you're running it on PaaS and something might have happened with the guest OS or the host OS, and that's causing issues with the application, so you want to know those things.
Mm-hmm.
And ETW logs and application logs are very specific to your application. Now, application logs is kind of this unstructured, free-form way of writing logs.
Mm-hmm.
It works. It's got an easy on-ramp. It actually works for quite a few folks. But ETW really gives you this nice, structured way of doing it. So as you're scaling out your application, you've got a big team that's writing multiple logs. You really think about how your application is going to kind of trace its flow and what is the information that needs to be present in the log message, and you're kind of strong typing your log, so you're guaranteed that all the information that you want is always present in the logs that you're writing out.
And I think some of this too is like some of the tools we've seen before are more, I'm a developer still building the app and I'm F5ing. Now, how do I get information when it's actually in production, right?
Yep.
Like that's kind of the difference, which is Now we have a million users using our site.
Yeah.
What is going wrong with my sort of live site diagnostics? Is that a fair assessment?
Sure, yeah. So it's going to help with, as you scale things out, it's going to help with providing structure to your logs and help with those live site diagnostics issues.
Okay.
So I'll just show you some code here. I won't write it out. So what does it look like? So this is the event source class, and this is for the guestbook entry. And I'm just defining events over here. The message is, there's an event ID, which is a unique ID for each log message that gets generated, and then there's a pretty printed error message that kind of helps me detect errors, or helps me kind of diagnose what's going on.
So can you highlight the light that I recommended by?
This is just a pretty printed line. It's like, I added an entry, and I'm passing in the partition key, the row
this
key,
is,
and the guest
the message is what's actually written into the log.
Yep, okay. Along with all the additional metadata, like the event ID, like that this is an event that's an informational as opposed to an error or a warning.
Sure.
So you're really structuring your log. So I'm defining all the logs that my application can have in this file, and it's a common file, and then wherever in my application I'm actually performing the actual action, I just call out to this class and say log this message with the information, right? So let's switch to, say, a worker role here, which is doing the thumbnail processing. Here's a good example. So I'm using both examples just to show you the difference here. So I could do a trace information log, which is just, you know, a string and a value,
mm-hmm.
or I could use the guestbook event source and log my message, and this is like a fully typed object.
Okay.
So I am guaranteed that everything that's in there is correctly logged.
Yeah, and when do I want to use one or the other?
I think as you kind of advance your application and you kind of it increases in scale and complexity, you really want to start thinking about structuring your logs.
Okay.
It does have a higher upfront cost because you have to think about what your event source is going to look like and
mm-hmm.
really define certain things upfront. But once you pay that tax upfront, then it becomes easier lower down the line. So that's really the way to think about it. So if you still are flexible, you can still use both, but once you really start getting into, you know, high scale scenarios, you really want to use ETW.
Okay.
Yep. Oh, the other thing I missed mentioning is ETW is something that Windows runs on, and it's also faster to capture those logs. So that's another reason why you would choose to do that.
Okay.
Yep. So that's how I instrument my code in there. And if I want to deploy it, I can just go back here. I showed you the configure dialog earlier. I've already selected which logs I want to capture, have the Contoso guestbook. That's
mm-hmm.
the name of the event source I've defined. And that's pretty much it. Once I deploy this application, it's actually going to enable diagnostics on the application along with the application tracing that I generated.
Okay.
Now that I've deployed, how do I go look at it, right? So. I'm not going to show the actual deployment, but I have this application that's already running. This is the same site we saw earlier.
Okay.
And this is where you would also attach a debugger, for example. That's the attached debugger. Right up there, you also have options for like disabling if you want to disable it, or update the configuration so you can dynamically update configuration.
Okay.
Or you can view the diagnostics data. So this is how kind of you view diagnostic information out of a running service. Now, you kind of mentioned live site kind of monitoring. We don't see this as a live site monitoring thing. We kind of see this as a dev test scenario where you've just deployed an application, something went wrong with it, and you want to quickly see what happened and debug through the issue. So it's a very simple page that just lets you peek at the information in there.
It's more like the what we consider the inner loop life cycle, right?
Yeah,
you're a developer,
exactly.
It works locally. It's a very common scenario. It works locally. You deploy it into your integration environment or test environment. It doesn't work. You don't want to redeploy it, right? You just want to see what's going on.
So this is before the millions of customers
yes.
go on. This is the kind of debugging you would do.
Because that page, that summary page, wouldn't like do justice to filter logs from millions of requests, right?
Which is a good point, which is what is kind of the live site, just to put you on the spot, like for the folks that have live sites, and this kind of relates to Travis's question as well, which is how does this work when you have a server farm in production so the logs are on multiple servers where you want to have that view, or especially when, you know, some process like the guest order could be hitting even multiple services, and you think about the flow of adding a guestbook entry actually calls a worker role, calls this, and that could be multiple services
There are two parts to answer the question.
Sure.
I'm going to take the first one, and I'll let Sarab answer the viewing part.
Give him the hard one.
So, So the way it works in a server farm is with Azure Diagnostics, Windows Azure Diagnostics, or any other collector you have, actually a collector or an agent is deployed onto those machines. The logs are being collected locally first, and then they're being transferred into a storage account. That storage account then can be accessed from any tool to view the data. That's the very high-level answer.
So but all of them write to one storage account, if you set it up that way, right?
Yep.
And if you really wanted to, you could do your own.
Yep. Right. So if you switch back to the screen here, so I'm on the Configure Diagnostics menu, and that's the storage account that I am setting to transfer all these logs to.
Okay.
Right, and it's just a storage account on my subscription. And when I go back to this diagnostics page, it's actually viewing data in that storage account. There's different tables in that storage account for each of those logs, and it's pulling data from that account to view that information. Kind of the viewing, Sam, question, there's multiple third-party tools out there, like Cerebrata, that people have been using. It's just a storage explorer tools. People use the VS storage explorer tools too.
And this is a table, to be fair.
It's really
not
a table.
Blobs,
yeah,
right?
It's a table.
Is there a will actually?
Well, there's some data goes into a blob storage.
If you have crash dumps, then it'll go to a blob storage. And so crash dumps is one of the options down there, right?
Great.
So I haven't enabled crash dumps over here.
Okay.
And
so what's this error that we see?
I'm seeing an error over here, right? So this is just a summary page, and it's actually saying entry succeeded, but I'm seeing an error. So, well, I cheated a little bit and added for the entry succeeded event source, I had made it an error, so that something would show up there. Where did that go? Yeah, there you go. So the event level was error, right? So it actually shows up as an error over here. And then it has all the information on, like, what was the input name? So it was me entering that information, how much time it took, and things like that. So it really helps you diagnose through the issue. And this was just the error event. We only show you the errors, but if you actually want to see the entire log trace, I can just hit view, and now you're in our Storage Explorer, where you get actually all the entries that are in there.
And this is the Visual Studio Storage Explorer,
yep.
That storage account where all those machines in the other example would be, quote, dumping data, for lack of a better word.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so where do we see that information that you just showed us?
Yes, so it'll be here, event message. I can just expand that. I don't need that one. And let's see. It's the exact same information, but with additional things about, hey, entry was added. It's actually, I guess it's going this way. Added an entry to the main guest account. It queued a message to process the blob. And then it succeeded over there.
Awesome.
By adding the entry.
Very cool.
So we should also mention this entire diagnostics experience works for IS as well.
Yes.
For virtual machines. The experience is almost identical, except the enablement.
Yeah, so what I showed you was kind of the past scenario for virtual machines. The way you go about is, again, through Server Explorer. I already have the exact same application, also deployed on IaaS. And if that refreshing shows up.
And while that's going, there was another question here about actually getting the sample code that you're showing today.
Yes.
And also, I should say, Andrew's samples as well. Are you all planning on publishing them or throwing them out somewhere?
If people really want, we can.
Yeah, we can.
They want pictures of your kids. I'm
not going to just share those. But.
Okay.
Yeah, if people really want it, we'd put it out there.
Yeah, it'd be great just for folks to kind of see and you know, to test drive the CTP6 features that are available.
I'll mention that I don't have specific plans. So every time we publish a blog, we typically attach sample code that goes with the blog.
Great.
So all the features I just showed have blog posts associated with them. So if you go look at the blog, you should be able to get the corresponding sample code.
Awesome.
Yeah, so there's another question. How can I make things in PaaS and IaaS talk to each other? Great question. That's actually my second project where it's the same guestbook application, but over here I have my worker role, which is still a worker role, but my web front end, I've actually deployed it to IaaS, right? And it's essentially talking through queues. So my IaaS front end has access to a storage queue, and it's passing the messages there.
The VM writes to a queue.
Yep. The worker role picks it up from the
worker
queue.
Worker role is just listening there.
Yep, exactly. And then processes the image and puts it up on the blob.
Okay,
so depending on what you're trying to do, you can architect your application the same way.
Okay.
And what I was going to show is, so in that scenario, I can still use the exact same diagnostic story. Just the way you enable it is different. You go to the configure page, and this is actually another cool page that has been around for a while. It really lets you configure all your virtual machine settings for dev test scenarios right from within VS.
And you can install multiple extensions, you can add different endpoints, you can even capture a snapshot of the virtual machine. To enable diagnostics, I'm just going to
add... And we're in Server Explorer here, under the Azure node, you're seeing the list of virtual machines.
Yep, exactly. So I just right-clicked, said configure, came to this page. I can install an extension, which is the Microsoft, monitoring agent extension. And when I add it, I kind of get the same configuration dialog. And that's how I would also configure diagnostics for IaaS. So.
Okay. Well, very cool, folks. This is obviously our first time, so give us feedback. Let us know if you thought. Thank you so much for all the questions here. You know, we'll be answering some of them on the forum as well if you have. The videos will be available on demand, and we're going to be doing this on a regular basis. So if there's other topics that you want us to talk about, definitely let us know. And folks, for more information, the debugger blog?
aka.ms/diagnostics with an S blog, all one word.
And folks, resource to link to?
Dan.
probably the Windows Azure Developer blog, and you can, of course, look for...
I don't have an aka.ms link, but yeah, the Azure Development blog is the best place to look.
Awesome. Boris, Sarab, Andrew, thank you all very much. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.